Carolina Snowflake. Carolina Snowflake. Carolina Snowflake.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Jason. I'm Jason. And we're back with another episode of the Carolina Snowflakes podcast. We are your hosts.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jason. And this week, we are continuing on our saga of G. Gordon Liddy.
Woo!
Where we left off, he was a DA lawyer shooting off guns in the courtroom, working for the FBI, getting promoted for sucking at his job over and over again. Mm-hmm. And Richard Nixon decided to... Richard Nixon decided that he really liked him and that he wanted him to work for him and be a spy. You remember?
I do. I feel like this was a better Nixon than the last one.
Yeah, no, I practiced it a little bit. I got a little bit better.
I can tell.
So what had happened was that Nixon was obsessed with fighting against leaks and he really wanted to get, you know, 4 more years as president. You know, we're all familiar with wanting 4 more years, especially when they screwed you out of the first 4 and you actually won. So Nixon decided he wanted to, you know, try to get 4 more years, and he was very paranoid. So he decides to, you know, set up this dirty trick section that we talked about called the Plumbers Union, where they were, you know, trying to fix the leaks. And he wants to put a bunch of distance between himself and the people that are members of this dirty trick section because it's going to escalate. Like, we're going from spying on people to try to reveal the Pentagon Papers to his trying to spy on the Democrats so that Nixon can win 4 more years. It's transitioned from a defensive into an offensive operation, and he needs to put a lot of distance between himself and the people that are doing it. And so he comes up with an idea for a technique that they would use called the tickler. Yeah.
I think they sell those in adult novelty shops. Right?
They do indeed. But I think this is a different kind of tickler.
Oh, my bad.
Okay, so the way the tickler worked was really fascinating. What he would do is he'd set up a bunch of underlings that would just do whatever he said, and he would get those people to call the people who worked in the spy section like multiple times a day and say, like, what have you got for me? I need something. I need something to bring up to my boss. You got to get me something. Mm-hmm. And these calls would happen constantly all the time. They'd show up at your house. What have you got for me? What have you got for me? And the reason that they would do that is to tickle people into working really hard and doing their job, because it's not Nixon that's telling them this stuff, but it's their peers. Mm-hmm. So you're constantly getting told by other spies and other peers, what have you got? What have you got? What have you got? And that wears on people and makes them want to have something for them because they're getting called constantly. So they'll work harder to try to get spy information.
Wouldn't that also theoretically lead people to make stuff up?
Yeah, it's kind of like, and I feel like we maybe have dealt with this with Republicans before, but it's kind of like torture. Mm. How when you torture somebody, they'll give you information, but it won't be legitimate information.
Yeah.
And
or it's like false confessions and interrogations and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But that was Nixon's plan, and I don't think it's very shocking that a Republican would come up with a plan like that.
Called the tickler.
Yeah. Because remember, that was kind of the point of this whole thing, is to examine how these older Republicans are doing the same shit, just differently.
Right.
Yeah. Because of the tickler campaign, they needed someone crazy enough to break the law in order to get information for the tickler. Mm-hmm. Because they were getting harassed so much, they're like, we need somebody who's crazy enough to break the law. And G. Gordon Liddy was crazy enough to break the law and was appointed as designated lunatic.
They're like sitting around, looking around the room.
Who can
they're
we
like,
get to break the law?
And then all eyes land on him.
Mm-hmm. So when he was asked to come up with some dirty tricks planned for like $500,000, he brings him a plan that costs $1 million. The things in this plan are crazy. Like, he wanted to drug hippies and put them in the opposition's office to like frame the Democrats for harboring hippies.
Harboring hippies.
Yeah. He wanted to hire a chase plane that would follow the Democrats' plane and wiretap it like from the skies.
Oh.
And like things like that would be like really crazy and expensive.
Well, you know, we do that now, but it's with Taylor Swift's plane. Yeah. They do. There's Swifties that are dedicated to tracking Taylor Swift's private jets.
Yeah. It wasn't so much about knowing where they were going, because that's kind of was public knowledge. It's the fact that back then, the way the technology was, you couldn't wiretap an airplane from the ground because of the distance. Yeah. So he wanted to hire another plane to follow the Democrat plane secretly. And
like the
wire
one plane's
tap
like, this guy.
Yeah,
he just keeps tailing us.
He's all up
us
on my ass. What and is this?
Like, try to lose him. I can't lose him. He just keeps, I don't know why.
Yeah. Obviously, those plans didn't work and they were really expensive. He also wanted to do a plan where he would like hire prostitutes and put them on a yacht and then like lure the Democrats onto the yacht and then like take pictures and be like, look at the Democrats hanging out with these prostitutes.
He was like, hey, Democrats.
Yeah.
Look what I got.
It's a boat full of, yeah, yeah.
Hookers and blow.
Yeah. These were all, like I said, crazy and didn't work. But his bosses were like, listen, you need to give us a non-crazy, non-million-dollar plan. So he comes up with an idea where he's like, let's just wiretap the Democrats, and we'll call it Operation Crystal.
Boring.
Yeah, so.
But okay.
They ended up giving him $250,000 to do his wiretapping plan.
They were like, listen, we are spying on a budget.
Yeah.
And we've got to stick to that budget, mister.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where things are going with him and Nixon. But a brief aside to the story comes in here in Liddy's autobiography. He claims that the war with the left is escalating and that he needs to harden himself to torture. He's afraid that the commies are going to take over and torture him. And so he needs to be ready for that. So he holds his hand over fire for increasingly long periods of time and attempts to build up his pain tolerance the same way one might build muscle, is the way he describes it.
Kind of like what he did zapping himself with electricity.
Yeah, but now he's like in his 40s and he's still doing this, which is pretty nuts.
Right.
He burns himself with cigarettes and matches, and it's always the left hand so that he can save his gun hand, obviously.
I mean, duh.
Yeah, so, you know, in tribute to him, I would like to give him this. He once burned the underside of his left hand so bad that he needed surgery, and it ruined the joint of one of his fingers. So he's not just like burning himself. He's like really burning himself to the point where he needs surgery.
He's cooking himself.
And he would use burning himself to recruit people to his dirty tricks team, because he would explain to them that like he would never rat on them, and the people in this dirty tricks team were so hardcore and would never rat, and they could stand up to torture and watch this. And he would just burn the shit out of his hand.
And people were like, ooh.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, you clearly would never rat on me, so I guess if I was going to work for a spy, it would be you. That's the logic. It's pretty weird, but that's going to come back into play, so.
Would that appeal to you?
No. No. But it's going to appeal to some people. There's a kind of person who I think that appeals to. People like him. I don't know, fascist psychos, I guess. It appeals to someone, clearly. So, after that aside, we get on to Watergate. So, Liddy sends some guys into the Watergate Hotel to bug the place where the Democrats have their operations set up. The people that go in to bug it don't do a good job, and the wiretaps don't really work. They're put all in bad places. One of them's like a $30,000 bug that like just doesn't work. So Liddy's bosses are pissed, and Gordon claims he can fix it. His plan to fix it is to break back in, put in new bugs, and then this time, to ensure they definitely get good intel no matter what, he's going to take pictures of all the documents in the office at the Watergate Hotel. He thinks this plan will take 4 hours. Liddy takes his bug expert, who's a dude named McCord, who happens to be Nixon's security expert, into the Watergate Hotel. This will end up being a bad plan. They place tape over the doors to stop it from latching, but they place it horizontally instead of vertically, which means you can see the end of the tape coming out of the door.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Liddy says this is a good idea because the people that work there that clean the offices put tape horizontally and not vertically on the doors, so that if people see the tape on the doors, they'll just think it's the cleaning crew because they're putting it the same way. It turns out that was completely stupid and dumb, because the security guard noticed it and was like, what the hell's going on, and caught them inside the Watergate Hotel.
Whoops.
And Liddy does escape, But McCord gets caught. His bug expert guy gets caught.
Uh-oh.
Now, everyone involved in this break-in rat on each other except for Liddy, who remains loyal. Nixon was very impressed with Liddy's loyalty, but because of the optics, he couldn't pardon him. He had to pretend like he didn't know about this because, remember, well, with the tickler, he's
like
trying to...
He's like three layers removed, quote-unquote.
So Liddy gets sentenced, like he gets charged and sentenced, and he gets sentenced to 20 years prison time for his Watergate fuckery. So now Liddy is sentenced to go to prison. Yeah, his story has taken quite the turn.
Yeah.
So G. Gordon Liddy was in prison fully expecting to do the 20 years that he was sentenced to. He's like, I'm going to have to do this. I got to be a man. I got to be a tough spy. While Liddy was in prison, his wife took a job as a teacher and was now like supporting the family. And also during the time he was in prison, Sylvester, Gordon's dad, dies. And that leaves Frances pretty much alone with the five kids that she had had to take care of them.
Well, weren't they all adults at this point?
No, they're not quite full grown. I think some of them are teenagers, but, you know, they're not adults.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So despite being away from his family, Liddy describes being at peace because of his incarceration, because he did what he did, quote, for the greater good. And then by which I think he means Richard Nixon, who, as we all know, is the epitome of the greater good.
Oh, yes.
He does say that he offered to sign divorce papers for Frances, but she inexplicably decides to stick with the G-Man. So she's going to stick with him even through his doing time in prison, which
is... Well, I mean, what would divorce have done for her?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point.
At that point in history, probably not much.
Yeah, you're right about that. So I guess I could see it. I thought it was kind of a weird choice, though. I mean, she could have went and dated someone who wasn't a Nazi psychopath.
Well, but she had already been with him for so long. I mean, she's got a type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
might
true.
As well stick with it.
So I have a question. How do you think Gordon wants in his autobiography, how do you think he would want us to think of him in prison?
Well, obviously he wants us to know that he already fashioned a way out, but he chose not to use it because he didn't want to give away the secrets.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. That's a good read on that. He also wants you to think that he's very tough and that prison doesn't hurt
him.
Well,
yes. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. that he's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. The quote is, in here, people were all neighbors, and it was like old home week. I couldn't understand most of what was being said. It was all in black dialect, and I didn't speak it. I have, since of necessity, become fluent. Oh. So apparently, he got a little gangster while he was in there. And he learned to speak a little bit of black dialect, so... That happened while he was in prison. Very interesting. I would like to hear him fluently speak black dialect. I think that would be an interesting thing to hear.
Sure.
I think it would be extraordinarily racist is what I think would happen.
Yeah.
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 So, although he claims to be a badass, he does say he was called racial epithets by the black inmates. He says that they don't like him because he walked naked from the shower, which was like a party foul in prison. Like, you're not supposed to...
Well...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't like him either.
Well, he has a really strange way of solving this problem. He starts singing Nazi songs in the shower, like ridiculously loud in German.
Oh, no. God.
And he claims that the loud German Nazi songs, because of how much pride he had, stuns everyone, and they're just cool with him walking around with his dick out now.
They're like, oh, that's fine.
Oh, yeah, I didn't realize.
Totally fine, dude. You just carry on.
That's such a Gordon thing to do, to just be like, yeah, my Nazi songs stunned everyone, and they stopped being racist towards me.
Of course.
But that is what he says happened. He also claims to have met the son of an SS officer and became chess partners with him. So, you know, he's getting to hang out with other Nazis. He claims that this Nazi is his friend and says, we got along famously. He knows more songs than I do, and shower time sounds like the invasion of Poland.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. When you just when you thought his Nazi references couldn't get any more just insane. And
showers. Prison showers.
Sounded like the invasion of Poland. I feel like there's something like distasteful and...
Well,
yeah. It's incredibly fucked up. So Gordon was sure that after letting him cool off in prison for a bit, that the FBI was going to come and interrogate him. He wanted to steel himself to be ready, and he claims to have done some very weird shit. First, he says he cut his calorie intake to 600 calories per day, which I guess you could do, but I don't see the point. But that's what he says he does. Next, he says he doubles his exercise. So he's exercising twice as much and eating less than half the amount of calories he's supposed to have. So he gets all skinny and weird. And And then he does some really crazy shit, like this passage right here. This is a nice little interesting paragraph from his book. Quote, "My mood remained steady. I was getting along with all the other prisoners. Things were going very well, too well, I decided. I needed to bring more stress into my life to bring my will to maximum power. I turned to my old reliable method of ordeal by fire. This test would have to exceed all others in destruction of tissue and time of severe pain. I selected a particularly strong-willed black bank robber named Tex with whom to engage in a battle of wills. Ready with a box of wooden matches, I got him into a discussion of the subject and pressured him to the point where he expressed disbelief and challenged me. Because I had been warned never again to indulge in that practice near or on finger joints, and my palm was already severely burned out, I had to go back to where I started years before, my forearm. The scars there were light. Strike a match, I said to Tex and locked my eyes onto him. He struck it and held it out, not knowing what to do next. I put the unburned outside of my forearm directly over the flame. As the fire burned through my flesh and melted it back into a blackened depression, a look of horror came over Tex, but he stayed with it. The match burned down and scorched his fingers before he dropped it. I grinned at him as he looked at the burn, unbelieving, looked ill, and then left."
Yeah.
So, what? What? He is now getting other people to burn him in prison just to, like, look how tough I am, baby.
Well, he said he did it because he was too dull.
Yeah, and he wanted to, you know, sharpen his...
He really is a psychopath.
Yeah, I mean, that is... I feel like we've said it a bunch that he's showing signs of being a psychopath, but I feel like that is an extraordinary passage. I feel like even if it wasn't true that he did that, the fact that that's what he thinks is cool mm-hmm. is insane to me.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be diagnosable, like somebody burning themselves like that.
I said he was either destined to be a Republican or a serial killer.
Mm-hmm. So he does tell us several fight stories about being in prison, and who knows if any of the stories are true, but he claims to have beat a bunch of people up. He also claims to have acquired a bunch of weapons, but he never uses them, leaving you to wonder why he bothered bringing it up at all. But he wants you to know he had weapons.
Mm.
So Gordon was sure that one of his Watergate co-conspirators named E. Howard Hunt was going to rat on Nixon. Hunt was in the same prison as Liddy, so Liddy starts a plan to do an assassination on E. Howard Hunt in prison. He thinks Nixon will send him signs through the press and that he can read that in the newspaper and that these signs will tell him to do the assassination, and so he wants to be ready to do it when Nixon gives him the go-ahead through the newspapers. He says that after speaking with gang dudes in prison, he learns that the price for a murder was 2 cartons of cigarettes. So Gordon has a plan to poison Hunt's food with nicotine and use cigarettes to pay off anyone he wants to help him accomplish this.
Well, okay. So you... Okay. There's a lot happening right here.
Uh-huh.
First of all, was Nixon communicating with him through the press?
Absolutely not.
I didn't think so.
Mm-hmm.
That's some, like, weird
mm-hmm.
current... It would be like the QAnon people who think that Trump is sending signals every time he has a speech.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? We find a Republican crazily thinking that the president is talking to him through the press.
He wants me to know the truth. Two, yeah, I mean, sure, you technically could die from nicotine poisoning, but like, it would take a lot.
Yeah, well... Actually, they say the amount of cigarettes in an entire pack, if you were to drink it in water, is enough to give you a heart attack.
But you would notice it.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so.
You would taste it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, you would. You would.
Especially if he's pulling it from cigarettes.
Well, this was his plan. It doesn't actually happen. I don't think it was really his plan. He just wants to sound tough.
Oh,
I don't.
He's just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He does run into Hunt in the prison, and Hunt basically tells Gordon to fuck off and that Nixon sucks.
He's like, get away, weirdo.
Yeah, and Gordon never sees him again. So it's only brought up in the sense that he wants you to know that he was considering killing this guy.
Oh, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And now it seems like Liddy is starting to go even crazier from starving himself. He tells a story where he's outside in the yard jogging and he saw a dead rat. Gordon was convinced that another prisoner set the rat there to fuck with him. Gordon's response is to step on the dead rat and squish it, and then gives the rat to the prisoner who he thought put it there.
Imagine. Imagine being that prisoner. Mm-hmm. And you had nothing to do with that.
Nothing at all. And
this crazy guy mm-hmm. who sings Polish invasion Nazi songs in the shower.
Burns himself. Mm-hmm.
Hands you a smushed rat.
Yeah. And the dude's like, what the fuck? And even in... Even in Liddy's description, nobody understands why this happened. Like, even in when he's describing it, he's like, no one understood what was going on. So I think later in life when he's writing his autobiography, he's like, I think maybe cutting the calories down so much I started to lose it around this point.
Oh, yeah.
But he won't admit that. He just admits that no one else understood what he was doing, as if he did. But I don't think that he did.
No.
So, because he was a lawyer, he did manage to make friends in prison by helping people with their cases.
Yeah.
He sends letters about the food, plumbing, and conditions to the correct people and actually manages to get some things in the prison to change. Once he even managed to organize a hunger strike that gets him... It works for what they want in the prison, but it does get him transferred to a maximum security prison. So, since he was the organizer of the strike, he got punished, but the strike did accomplish its goals.
Hmm.
So he is kind of being somewhat what we would call productive in prison, but it's because of his lawyer training, which I found pretty interesting. It's like he knew how to work the system in a way that benefited him.
Well, it's probably also why he never got shanked.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, it probably is. Why he never had to survival. Use any of those weapons.
Yeah, using those weapons that he totally, for sure, definitely had.
Mm-hmm. In this new prison, when he gets transferred to the maximum security prison, he tells one of the funniest lies of the whole book. This is clearly a lie from beginning to end, but it's very funny. He says that one of his fellow inmates was a Chinese-born kung fu master. He claims they became friends, and this is what he says happened next. Quote, "We worked out at the weights together, and finally I decided that it might be mutually advantageous to exchange instruction. He hesitated, then took me aside and told me that he had never imparted such knowledge to an Occidental, and despite our friendship, was not sure he ever should. He paused and then studied me quietly and finally spoke. You are a very violent man. I can see it in your eyes. I control it, Liddy said. You must. If you ever wish to use what I teach you to take advantage of the weak, I will find you wherever you are and kill you myself." So, so what he's saying is...
So then he starred in a Steven Seagal movie.
Yeah. He got secret kung fu training, and the dude threatened that if he ever used it on weak people, he would come back and kung fu kill him.
I will find you.
Yeah. Now, that is one of the saddest but also funniest lies in the whole book, because that definitely didn't happen.
Of course not.
And it's also just such a childish way to think about prison. Like, yeah, when I'm in prison, some kung fu master's going to teach me secret death punch techniques.
Who happens to also be there for crimes.
Yeah, for crimes of being a crazy, I don't know, kung fu master. He never really says what the dude's crimes
are. Tax evasion or something.
Yeah, it's such a, just such an outlandish, childish story. Like, when I was a kid, there was a guy we knew who used to lie all the time, right? Like, he would just lie about the craziest things. He'd be like...
This is a question. Do we all have a friend from our youth who was like a... compulsive liar?
Yeah.
Because I do.
Yeah, that would just lie. He would just be like, yeah, I shot a gas tank with this gun and it exploded and set the woods on fire. And you're like dude, that definitely didn't happen. Yeah.
No, you didn't.
No part of that happened. You don't even have a gun. Like, what do you... You know what I mean? And it's like those kind of lies. And it's also like such a... Like a child... Like a cinematic, Hollywood cinematic view of how a kung fu master would be.
Yeah.
Like, I will teach you this, but only if you use it for good. It's just like a samurai movie version of reality.
Well, it's very immature mm-hmm. thinking. And it's comical when it comes from an adult.
Yep. He was a full-ass, he was a grown-ass man by this point, obviously. He'd been in the FBI and been a lawyer and worked for the DA and worked for Richard Nixon. So this isn't some random guy making up lies. This is a very important guy making up lies. I mean, he did Watergate. He just did Watergate. I mean, it was him. So after his kung fu training on April 12th, 1977, President Carter commuted Liddy's sentence to 8 years. Carter commuted
Jimmy.
Liddy's. Yeah. He was like, oh, I'm just a peanut farmer. I'd like to pardon you. No, he didn't pardon him. He commuted his sentence to 8 years. Carter says the reason that he does this is for fairness, because he compared Liddy's charges to other people charged with similar things and was like, it's not fair that he's going to do 20 years, which I guess, Jimmy, I don't really know. Huh. But basically, this allows Gordon to get paroled because he's already done 4 years, which is half of the eight,
right,
which means he's up for parole, and he gets paroled and gets out of prison. So he thought he was going to do 20, and he does four, thanks to a peanut farmer named Jimmy Carter. So thanks for that one, Jimmy. We really appreciate that.
Oh, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. Now, while Gordon was in prison and his wife Frances was stuck raising the kids and dealing with the press, Liddy didn't really give her credit for this, but the Washington Post actually did it in an interview with her and the kids. Gordon, on the other hand, tells a story about when Frances picked him up from prison and noticed they were being tailed. He made her let him drive and proceeds to drive like an absolute maniac, trying to lose them because he thinks he has training in how to lose them, but he doesn't. He doesn't know anything about what he's doing.
All he knows is kung fu.
Yeah.
He hasn't been evasion trained.
Yeah, but he thinks he has. So Fran gets terrified and cries while he's driving like a maniac. And Liddy wants to cheer her up, so he sings a song called America, Tomorrow Belongs to Thee, which is a Nazi song from the play Cabaret. In the play, it's sung by a Nazi to lampoon American nationalism. But since the 70s, Nazis have adopted America, Tomorrow Belongs to Thee as sort of an anthem and have embraced it. And so he sings that, and according to him, that totally calms Frances down because she hears the power of it. Yeah, this is a theme with him. Like, the power of Nazi songs causes people to change the way they're reacting.
She probably just passed out.
Yeah, or just was like, oh my God, Gordon, he's singing his Nazi songs.
No, she was
again.
Like, well, this is it. We're all going to die.
We're all going to die.
In a fiery car crash.
Yeah. So he doesn't lose his tails. I don't even think he had tails, but that's the story he describes. And that's pretty much how he ends his autobiography. Now, that's not the end of his story, but that's how he ends his autobiography, which comes out in 1980. So he has now done Watergate and gotten out of prison. And the question is, if you're G. Gordon Liddy, what are you going to do next?
Well, I guess you're going to do what you do best.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, what he decides to do is to become a media celebrity. He wants to become a celebrity because he can't really work in politics anymore because his name is tainted. But he does have a lot of attention and people want to hear from him. So he's going to try to parlay his Watergate crazy career.
Like talk show circuit.
Yeah. Yep. Into a career of being a celebrity. And this is where we get audio clips of G. Gordon Liddy. This is where G. Gordon Liddy does things that are recorded that we can now examine. And that's kind of where the story's going to go next week. Next week, we're going to be hearing some clips of G. Gordon Liddy in various medias and things that he does after he gets out of prison trying to make himself into a celebrity. Mm. And so that's where we're going to leave off for this week. And that's what we're going to be doing next week. We're going to have some audio clips of old Gordon talking after he got out of prison to lots of different people and doing things you would not expect G. Gordon to do.
Is it Oprah?
It's not Oprah, but it's close. It's close. I don't think Oprah was around yet, but it's the 80s equivalent.
Okay.
So, and he will kind of do a lot of things that our modern Republicans do. So I think that's where we kind of leave the story off for this week. I mean, that's where he chose to end his autobiography, so I think it's a good stopping point. Plus, now that he's out of prison, there's going to be lots of different things to talk about with his various media attendings. So that's where we're at now. Thank you for listening. You can always email us at our email at carolinasnowflakes@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.